I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities, and we hope gain for a poem that interests us some new readers and listeners. And I say listeners because Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our PennSound archive, writing.upenn.edu/PennSound. Today I'm joined here in Philadelphia at the Kelly Writer's House in our third floor Garrett studio by Michelle Taransky, whose new book, Sorry Was in the Woods, great title, is being published by Omnidawn, and whose Barn Burned Then was selected by Marjorie Welsh for the Omnidawn Poetry Prize in 2008, book review editor at Jacket 2, and a longtime dear friend of the Writer's House and a member of the faculty in the critical writing program here at Penn. And by Kristen Gallagher, poet, editor, and professor living in Sunnyside, Queens, which, by the way, was once like a political paradise. You know about that.
Yeah. Lewis Mumford Way
Seriously,
is my street name.
You found the right neighborhood. Associate professor of English at CUNY LaGuardia Community College, another paradise, who walks to work from Queens to
Queens.
who was a founding member of the Writer's House back in 95-96 in the previous century, who earned a PhD from Buffalo Poetics in 2005, and whose book We Are Here is 99 pages of writing and transcriptions of recorded speech that capture human interactions with maps, GPS-enabled devices, and other directional media. I love that phrase, directional media. I just wanted to, whether it's true or not, doesn't matter. I wanted to put it in that intro. And it is true, though. And by Rachel Blau Duplessis, the Brooklyn-born, not Queens-born, but Brooklyn-born critic
and
poet,
Burrows,
whose most recent book-length installment of her long, ongoing poem, Drafts, is, I'm happy to say, Surge, Drafts 96-114, published by Salt, whose PennSound page is a treasure trove of recordings of Drafts, as well as lots of other work, including both audio and video of her beautiful and moving 8-minute talk on the importance to her of George Oppen, and whose Blue Studios poetry and its cultural work, among her many books, is one I especially recommend. Kristen, hello. Thank you for leaving Sunnyside, for joining us.
Thank you for inviting
and
me.
And Michelle, good to see you again.
Thanks for having
me. I hope every day, always. And Rachel, congratulations on the new Drafts book.
Thank you, Al.
It's very exciting. And here's a Rachel quiz. I'm just popping on all of you. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, what is the most recent draft that we have on PennSound, recording of draft? What's the
you
biggest,
read in my,
the
at
highest
my series,
number?
107.
Wow, 97? You might know this.
107 or 97, I think. I think it's a 7.
Wow, I have no
idea. No idea. It's 105. And it
close,
wasn't recorded close. In your series.
Oh.
Where was it recorded? This is the quiz continued.
Temples.
Nope.
Segway.
Lawrence, Kansas in March 2011.
But what about New Zealand?
You didn't read post 105, or they haven't been segmented yet. That's the
oh,
trick.
That may
That's
be why. That
okay,
may be why.
So my
I
quiz
know,
failed.
I know.
And
I
now we move on to the poem after that quiz. I love the idea of the quiz. We'll do that from now on in Poem Talk.
Right.
Okay, today we've gathered here to talk about, I just like to talk about your work, your drafts.
You're a sweetheart.
Drafts are amazing.
They really are.
They really are. Not I, the drafts. We're gathered here to talk about Lisa Robertson's The Weather, whose sections are titled for the days of the week, starting with Sunday. And on Poem Talk today, we've decided to talk about Monday, the second section. Each section consists of a several-page-long prose poem followed by a short, lineated poem. The Weather was published in 2001. In October 2000, Louis Cabri, curator of the Philly Talks series here at the Writer's House, invited Lisa along with Steve McCaffrey for the usual Philly Talks double reading plus discussion. On that occasion, she read the then-unpublished work, the Monday through Saturday sections. So we'll now listen to her, Lisa, reading the Monday poem, followed by Rachel here, who's graciously agreed to read the beginning of Monday's prose poem. So here's Lisa and then Rachel.
Give me hackneyed words because they are good. Brocade me the whole body of terrestrial air. Say spongy ground with its soft weeds, say self because it can, say arts of happiness, say you have died, say sequin because the word just appeared, say, weather, take this adult from its box, memorize being sequined to something, water. Everything you forget inserts love into the silent money. Memorize huge things of girders greased. Say the water parting about the particular animal. Say what happens to the face as it gala tints my simple cut. Vicious this afternoon, the beautiful light on the cash is human to guzzle with. Go away, wild feelings. There you go, as the robin, as the song sparrow go. The system shines with an uninterrupted light. Its petal caked, leaves shoot up, each leaf's a runnel, far into the night a sweetness, marvelous, spectacular, brilliant, clouded toward the south, it translates Lucretius, say cup of your heart, rush sluice is yellow sluice, Kate Moss is Rousseau, have my arms, say impasto of atmosphere for her fur, halo open her face, misplace the death. All the truth under the tree has two pinky, oozy names. Say trying to possess or not. Say if you thought love was ironical, if pleasure emancipates, why aren't you somewhere? Sincerity.
This is the beginning of Monday, which is a prose poem about one-third of the poem. First, all belief is paradise, so pliable a medium, a time not very long, a transparency caused, a conveyance of rupture, a subtle transport, scant and rare, deep in the opulent morning, blissful regions, hard and slender, scarce and scant, quotidian and temperate. Begin afresh in the realms of the atmosphere that encompasses the solid earth, the terraqueous globe that soars and sings, elevated and flimsy, bright and hot, flesh and hue. Our skies are inventions, durations, discoveries, quotas, forgeries, fine and grand, fresh and bright, heavenly and bright. The day pours out space, a light red roominess, bright and fresh, bright and oft, bright and fresh, sparkling and wet, clamor and tint. We range the spacious fields a battlement trick and fast, bright and silver, ribbons and failings, to and fro, fine and grand.
Thank you, Rachel. So we have a lineated poem that begins with these lines, or this line and a half. Give me hackneyed words because they are good. First question is, why would anybody say that? Well, what is that sentiment? And second, what does that have to do with the project, if anything? Kristen, your thought on that?
Well, I think that she's interested in derangement, delusion. She writes about the project of the weather in a DC poetry essay that it's called something like
A Report on Sincerity.
The Weather, A Report on Sincerity, right. So that's the title of the essay. She quotes Stacey Doris talking about the need for poetry to be delusional, I believe is the word. And then I also see her talking in that essay about her interest in that 18th and 19th century issue about whether literature should be striving for scientific clarity or embellished kind of in the tradition of Dr. Johnson. Maybe you could call it flowery, poetic language. So I feel like hackneyed words are something she's really making a commitment to in this project.
What's a synonym for hackneyed in this context?
Well, I suppose that it's not clarity. She's not striving for clarity. So the weather report as we receive it today on the radio would be something that would be all about clarity, scientific accuracy.
Or at least faux clarity.
Right. I mean, it comes under the auspices of this is an accurate report and you should believe it.
Right.
And, you know, how nobody lies about the weather on purpose anyway. So I think she's clearly trying to, I don't know, speak back to that or derange that or maybe occupy a space somewhere between complete delusion and the clarity promised by a weather report, something like that.
Yeah, I really agree with you. And I think that hackneyed, for me, also has something to do with genre.
Oh, yes.
I'm also quite informed by something that Lisa has written. Probably it's the same approximate essay. This appeared in the Chicago Review in a special section on Lisa's work. She talks, first of all, the thing, the piece, the book, has these two genres in it, the poem that Lisa read and the part of the thing that I read. The poem is like a meditative descriptive poem, very classic kind of move in the, like 18th to early 19th century. But what the hackneyed and the genre thing, the other genre, is really prose poem that is picking up weather vocabulary, just as Kristen just said, that she deterns by making it, by re-feminizing it, I guess you could say, because she's very clear, Lisa is quite clear, that the rhetorics of clarity were gendered. And this can be seen not just by going to the New Science and the things that she's mentioning, but by going to Wordsworth and the manly style of clarity that he talks about in his great essay in Poetics. So what do you do when you're a woman is the question. Are you re-inhabiting? Do you say, I'm rejecting the feminine style and all of the insincerity and artifice, you know, in the Glamour magazine stuff? Or do you say it's possible to separate the feminine from a woman and that other people can have the feminine, which is another argument? Or do you say you want to do both? You want a kind of masculinist type of this is gender ideas that are very hackneyed, masculine clarity and the feminine. And that's why she says, I want to infiltrate sincerity.
So let's go back to the claim of sincerity. Let's do basic stuff here. How is she saying that weather, talk of weather, rhetoric of weather, weather reports, she was listening nightly to 1 a.m. BBC shipping reports when she was in Cambridge. How can that be sincere? Michelle, where does sincerity come from? A weather report?
Well, I mean, I think it's in the different goals or projects of a weather report versus the projects or goals of a poem. A weather report shouldn't have feelings, shouldn't have wild feelings, though it might evoke sort of universal feelings in all of us. And that these feelings and expressions of feelings, those are the realm of poetry. And so there's this conflation that Rachel and Kristen are talking about. What happens when you have a woman who, of course, has these wild feelings just waiting to be edited out, and you want to talk about something like the weather, which is a very social space, something that everyone knows how to talk about.
In fact, she said that one of the things she had to adapt to when she spent all that time in England was this, what she actually says, ethnic. She uses the word ethnic somewhere. The ethnic sense that people have in England that you need to figure out how to talk about the weather, and once you do, you've moved into a social space. So does anybody want to say, we've sort of said this, but let's talk about the method or the origin of the project. She tells us in several introductions. Can anybody just sort of restate? Kristen, do you remember what she did, where she was, why she did some research on 18th and 19th century meteorological?
Yeah, she was doing archival research. And she's doing writing at the same time. She's doing research writing on how clouds came to become things that were named, as opposed to what existed before, just kinds of descriptions of the sky that seem to include things like shading and
something. Can we say what's so remarkable and interesting about representing clouds, describing clouds?
Well, yeah, because they're nebulous as objects. They don't have clear edges. They're not really defined. You know, you can fly a plane through them, right? So as a thing, they're just barely, they're kind of in, what is the word for in between that we always use in
liminal?
Liminal, yeah.
Liminal.
Thank you, everybody. Yeah. All
favorite word.
Yeah, I know.
Talk about hackneyed. There's a hackneyed word.
I mean, it's so totally liminal. Changeable.
She says clouds presented a specific formal difficulty description in nomenclature. So this is one of those, she's so smart. She's interested in Constable, she says, mm-hmm. who's the guy who's trying to depict, represent something that's cloudy. Now, in the Tuesday prose poem, we get a lot about cloudy. What do we get in the Monday prose poem that's weatherish?
Well, I was going to just go back on that for one second because Lisa Robertson is a very interesting cultural theorist in poetry. That's one of her beauties, actually, and one of her the way that she does it is tremendous and elegant. What she speaks about, again in the introduction, is that weather, and also in the part that I was just reading, where weather has to be invented, which is sounds completely wacky until you realize that what she's talking about is the description of weather as a kind of scientific entity that you can study. And she talks about the people who are amateurs at that point, they're really not, quote, scientists in our terms. They decide to observe. And the guy whom she adduces is this guy called Luke Howard in the 18th century, who invented the classification system for clouds that we still use. There are a couple of things out of that. One is that observations piling up, can, in the right hands, lead to new paradigms for seeing and understanding. And that would be a justification for experimental poetry. That is, you experiment with seeing and with the language, and you come to new conclusions.
Clouded toward the south, it translates Lucretius. Say cup of your heart, rush sluice is yellow sluice, Kate Moss is Rousseau, have my arms. Say impasto of atmosphere for her fur. Halo open her face, misplace the death. All the truth under the tree has two pinky, oozy names.
So let's talk about abstraction for a second.
Mm-hmm.
When she listened to the BBC shipping reports, she got really interested in the structure of the language, she said. She said she had no sense of the referentiality there because she was listening to stuff she didn't understand. But she heard some place names, she didn't know what they were, a lot of numbers, she didn't know what they referred to, and a lot of directions. She said it was rhythmic utterance, and really beautiful, she said. People told her things about those reports along the lines of England's being tucked in at night. So she had very sentimental associations with the weather report. They also told her, her friends told her, that it was so much better than reading Charles Olson to listen to these abstract-sounding report. So I guess I want to ask you, and she says she did not, these texts, such as the one we read, are not influenced by the weather reports. It's not, she's not transcribing weather reports.
Right.
Rather, they're not made of them. They replicate dissipative structures and notions of representations of modifications and change across time. So I invite Michelle maybe to comment on anything about that. How interesting to hear weather reports as a kind of music.
Yeah, I mean, very interesting to think about the practice of writing critically versus the practice of writing creatively. In critical writing, there are templates, there are ways that you can be rhetorical. She could study the structure of the weather report. This is the way they talk about the weather, but how to talk about that in a poem is something she had to invent. You could look at these and say they're prose poems or they're lyric poems, but maybe they're a kind of cloud kind of poem that we don't have a name for yet. And that's the amazing
cloud
thing.
Cloud poem, sure. Mm. Kristen, your thought on this?
I like that idea of a cloud poem. You're welcome, Michelle. Thank you. Just going back to what I was saying before, trying to articulate that I feel she's actually trying to occupy this space between descriptive clarity and deranged interiority or imagination, let's say. So I see the sentence structure as looking very descriptive. It feels hard and clear, but the words that are put into the structures and the way they line up together don't really make sense and don't exactly feel like they're about the weather, but they produce kind of moods and feelings that are like a different kind of weather, maybe the emotional weather or something like that. But it really feels the first thing that interested me about this book, that interested me when it came out and still interests me going back to it, is the way that the structure really feels like it's built for something hard and clear and communicative, but what's inside the structure deranges that.
Nice.
Yeah, can I just say one of the things that amused me is that the days of the week, the book alternates between days of the week and then these interstitial...
which are maybe associated with the days and maybe just not. Maybe
well, the thing that happens is that any day is not that day. That is, it's the name of a rubric under which maybe the whole change of the seasons and the whole time she was there, wherever there is being talked about. That is, the weather changes literally phrase by phrase, and the seasons can change too, and the different things can change. So the rubric Monday or Tuesday encapsulates under it weeks gone by, seasons changing, emotional, you know, like washes of emotion back and forth, like washes of almost of watercolor. It's very labile. And that it's a contrast, as you're saying, between the hard or the rubric and then the diffusion. That's so interesting in this work. There's always this between.
Yeah. I like the days of the week thing too, because I was thinking there's something about time happening in this book too, right? Those, once you get into the fuzziness and the cloudiness idea, right? Monday is a funny concept, right? That's not a thing actually. So
right.
It's already a little arbitrary. But that the way the weather would have been, you know, appeared to her in archival research would be this more slow data accumulation of the almanac kind of thing, right? Like one person records one thing with one time on it. So we just take that. Whereas now we have, you know, there's little pins sticking out every few feet across the globe, measuring the Earth digitally and reporting to a computer somewhere. And the computerized voice comes out the radio. You know, there's no more human hand in it, you know. I forget where I was going with that.
Well, somebody had to program the computer.
Well, that there's just something about the old time, fuzzier, and things are just...
Let me throw out a simple...
Not as fuzzy, maybe.
Simple generalization, and maybe, Michelle, you'll pick up on it, or maybe you'll just use it as an excuse to say something you were thinking about. But I just want to throw this out. I mean, I think that the general notion of the weather is it's the one thing that we get in the quote-unquote news that's non-political, because it's, while it's contingent, it's by definition naturalized. And what Lisa Robertson convinced me of, I was in the room, I think you were too, when she did this at Philly Talks, I thought, oh my goodness, it's not so much that she's politicized the weather, but she's creating a kind of ethnography of the weather. Mm-hmm. And she says in the D.C. website, I think she wrote that essay before she did a reading in D.C. probably, the real knowledge of weather is indigenous. She's basically talking about the crucial adjustment one makes. So, Michelle, I'm going to turn to you. Just say that I think that always in Lisa Robertson's work, which ranges across a lot of different projects, there's always a critique of the social functions of genre. And we began by talking about hackneyed. Hackneyed is good. She's basically saying, I'm going to see if I can inhabit the genre. In this case, trying to get along in Cambridge is the need to speak the rhetoric of the weather sincerely and therefore become not indigenous, but at least to speak to indigenous people, as it were, to quote-unquote indigenous Cambridge. And so the critique of the social functions of genre, it continues in this project. And I never can think of weather again in the same way, because it's become kind of the architecture of social functions. Anyway, Michelle, I bought you some time. Do you want to react to that or go on to another point?
I could react to that. So sure, that we think of the weather as something that you don't need to be necessarily educated to talk about, or
right,
need a specialized vocabulary, that it's a universal urge to talk about the weather, to describe the weather, and it shouldn't be difficult. It should be very accessible. And then that's where the poetry comes in, that poetry can take something that's so accessible and perhaps hackneyed and seems easy and complicate it by making us aware of these structures that were already there, that she brings to this other there, and then you can sort of like look at them as if they were specimens, I mean, which is what we're doing.
Yeah. I have one more question, and then I'm going to invite each of you to say, you know, a final thought on this. I'm going to quote you the Walter Benjamin Arcades Project quote that is the epigraph to the book, and it may or may not have any bearing on what we've said, but it's a big, big statement. Here it is. Architecture, fashion, yes, even the weather, are in the interior of the collective. What the sensoria of organs, the feeling of sickness or health, are in the individual. They stand in the cycle of the eternally self-same until the collective seizes upon them in politics and history emerges. Okay, well, we could do a whole poem talk on that mm-hmm. passage. So I wonder if there's anything there that makes sense given what we've been saying. Rachel?
Well, I'm going to do what I might normally do under these circumstances, which is to say something about feminism. This is a patently, Lisa Robertson is a strongly feminist writer, although it isn't necessarily an obvious move. And she's also a strongly feminist intervener in culture. And this is, I see that the Benjamin quotation, while it doesn't only mean that, could be torqued to mean that. You're just talking about genre, and I have to say that one of the things that fascinates me about Lisa Robertson's work are the projects that she does within genre. Debbie and Epic, just yes. the very title should communicate quite a lot. The Eclogue with Ex-Eclogue. The Pastoral Lyric with a work called The Men, which is really a twist and a turn. So she is very big on détournement, on the deturning of genre by women who are intervening in the history of genre and the history of their own place within many, many genres. So as she says, and I don't know where she says this, actually, so sorry, the necessity of women's tactical intervention in the official genres, you know, is what is necessary to... I made that kind of circular, but you know what I mean.
Yes. Look, we could talk a lot more about this. Why don't we just artificially stop and take one turn each to say something that you wanted to say but didn't get a chance to about the poem, about the projects. Kristen Gallagher, start us off. Final word.
Final word. I was thinking about the cover to this book and how oddly digital and contemporary designy it seems, given that her work is so historical and archival. And it reminded me of the artist Corey Archangel, who has a piece of art called Clouds, where he has simply taken Super Mario video game and removed everything from it but the cloud, the image of everything but the clouds, and it kind of looks like this. So I thought that was... I was interested in how this cover came to be and what its relationship to the book is.
Well, I think we're all holding a later edition. It may be that the original did not have that look, but we will reproduce that on the Poem Talk site. Rachel, final word.
Yeah, I think that one thing that we bypassed, which I don't want to bypass, that is extremely important to Lisa Robertson's work in general and to this poem in particular, is the eroticism and the sense that writing is erotic, that that lines are put together by the ear, that there's swoon, that there's pleasure, that there's stimulation and a field of attention at the same time. And this is where I find actually the utopian feeling in this work, not so much in a direct claim of politics, but the sense of a liberation in pleasure and in the erotic in writing, I'd like to underline in her work in general.
Thank you. Michelle, final word.
I just wanted to read a sentence from Robertson's essay, The Weather Report, The Weather Report on Sincerity, that Kristen was talking about, because for me, the word sincerity has been forever and always marked by Zhukovsky, and I love that. But at the same time, I want to say this out loud so that this can complicate and reinvigorate our idea about sincerity and poetry. And yes, so this is from that. Here's what I want to say. Sincerity has a rhetorical history. The history of the description of weather parallels the history of sincerity as a rhetorical value. Gotta love a poet talking about value.
Wonderful. Well, we like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of Gathering Paradise, which is a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow Dickinsonian or maybe not so Dickinsonian hands to gather a little something really poetically good to hail or commend someone or something going on in the poetry world. Kristen, other than Sunnyside, so what would, just say in a sentence why Sunnyside was a political utopia.
Oh, it's a lot of, some of it has to do with housing, these collectively run garden apartments,
right,
that are still there. The whole entire community is
the collective spirit.
It is. It's so
really
lovely.
Amazing.
Everybody knows each other in my neighborhood. We're friendly. It's really beautiful. And
so,
people
you
think
know,
Queens is the suburbs.
The last
but I, could
I
be
checked,
at the New
some 25,000 people listen to
minutes.
Poem Talk, and that means that you will be overrun by people pulling up in their U-Hauls to move to Sunnyside. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to preempt your gathering paradise other
than
okay. Sunnyside.
That's okay. I'm going to gather paradise for the press troll thread out of Buffalo, New York, run by Divya Victor, Chris Sylvester, Holly Melgard, and Joey Yuris Algozin. I don't know if you're supposed
formerly
to pronounce that
Philadelphia.
French. Formerly
two of them were former University. Temple students.
Former
two
Temple students, that's
there's
right.
There's that Philly-Buffalo connection.
They publish really quickly a lot of, I think, kind of garbagey conceptual projects. A book that they're about to put out is called McNugget by Chris Alexander. It is a collection of all of the uses of the word McNugget on Twitter for 1 month. During the month that this happened to be going on, a McNugget that looked like George Washington sold for $500,000 or something. So garbage is really where our culture is at these days, and troll threads on the case. So go troll thread.
Great. Michelle Taransky, gather some paradise.
Sure. I just wanted to gather a little bit of paradise around a special place that's located in South Hadley, Massachusetts, called Flying Object. It's a place not unlike the wonderful Kelly Writer's house. It is a place where letterpressers get together, readers, writers. It's an amazing, magical object of a place, and there is a lot of paradise there. If you can get there, go. It's run by Guy Pettit, Emily Pettit, and Dara Wire. They're amazing.
Fantastic. I want to recommend the series that happens irregularly, hosted by our Michelle Taransky, Whenever We Feel Like It. And recently, three of the four of us happened to be there for a wonderful reading given by Patty McCarthy and Jenna Osman. And that reading is available on Pensound, as are all, Whenever We Feel Like It readings. Well, that's all of the good hackneyed words we have time for on Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House at the University of Pennsylvania and the Poetry Foundation, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Michelle Taransky, Kristen Gallagher, and Rachel Blau Duplessis, and to Poem Talk's director and engineer, Steve McLaughlin, and to our editor, as always, the very same Steve McLaughlin. Next time on Poem Talk, Tayshe Silverman, John Tim Payne, and Natalie Anderson join me in a discussion of W.B. Yeats' mesmerizing Yeatsian, Poundian, performance of The Lake Isle of Innisfree. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again for that or another Poem Talk.